Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Focus Group podcast. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark, and this week I want to revisit what has long been Donald Trump's biggest political ace in the hole and examine how much of an ace it really is. I'm talking about immigration, the thing that launched Donald Trump into orbit in the first place. Even when Trump's approval rating is several points underwater, as it currently is, his approval rating on immigration is roughly even. Today, we're going to listen to what it sounds like when people who voted for Trump like his immigration policies and what it sounds like when they don't. More specifically, for a lot of the show, we're going to talk to Hispanic voters who voted for Trump last year but say they disapprove of his job performance. If you've been watching the polling on this, you see that there's been a big decline in Hispanic support for Donald Trump, so I want to explore some of that. My guest today has been doing some excellent reporting on the immigration beat for The Bulwark. Adrian Carrasquillo, the author of The Bulwark's immigration newsletter, Huddled Masses. What's up?
Sarah, thank you for having me.
So it's been several months since you were last on the show, and that was a great episode. That was your first go around, but now you're like a seasoned, grizzled, yes, Bulwark immigration beat reporter. And so as you've been out on the ground, you know, talking to the people making policy, those affected by the immigration policies, what events do you think have shaped this debate the most? Like, what has had the biggest impact on the communities you cover?
I was just having the conversation with the producer right before this, and it's like, some of this stuff can feel like, okay, we want to do these check-ins maybe quarterly, or like, there's a similar shape to some of these conversations. And I'll never forget the first time that I was hearing Latino Trump supporters was when I was doing the prep for the first focus group, and it was after Guantanamo Bay. And these were people saying like, hey, look, you know, immigrants take our jobs, or using some of these talking points, you know, from MAGA on the right. But then they were saying, but this Guantanamo thing's not cool. This is dictatorship. And they were using, you know, words like Nazi and stuff like that. And that was like, okay. And then we saw it again with Venezuela. And we saw them just shipping people without due process and people being like, actually, it's not okay to ruin someone's life just because of an administrative error. So this is the stuff that I think is super important. And now checking in a few months later, as the summer's coming to an end, folks are saying like, thought the border was out of control. We needed to fix that. But then the way he's doing it is so dramatic. The way he's doing it is inhumane. And they just go down the line because it's going into their communities. This is easy to have these conversations theoretically, or maybe you're watching Fox News and you're just like, we got to tone that down. And it's a harder conversation when it's your neighbor, when the kid's in school. So that's the stuff that I've really seen that Americans have been confronted. A lot of us that do this every day, we've been hearing for years on the left and the right, the immigration system's broken. And everybody pretty much agrees that that's the case. But what we've done now is Americans are getting it in their face to seeing what a broken immigration system looks like.
To dig in on that just slightly, when you say that it's broken and people know it's broken,
yeah,
is it like stem to stern? It's broken in the sense that we don't seem to have a way to know who's in the country, who's coming through, like an orderly system to process people. Because I do think, having listened to voters talk about immigration for so long, people always say the same thing, right? They want people to come the right way. And that assumes that there's like a super easy, normal way to gain citizenship in this country, something that is, it takes a reasonable amount of time and that, you know, an average person could get through and be vetted and whatnot. But like, what do people think is the broken part?
I mean, Sarah, you know this, when people have talked for like a couple decades, but certainly over the last decade, about a broken immigration system, and that was agreed to by folks on the left and on the right, it was because people said, hey, it's not fair. Like, I've been on this so-called line forever, and there's people they feel are cutting, or they feel like what you just said, that this system, there's something wrong with the way that we process people, and how do we get from, you know, people understanding that we need legal immigration, we need labor, wanting to sort of stem some of the illegal immigration stuff. So I fully always admit that that's part of that conversation that you'll have with voters. And I think the other part that people are seeing now when I talk about broken is also like, we see it so much. Whoa, 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 wait, this guy's my neighbor. He goes to my church. He's been here 15 years. He's been here 25 years. One of the focus group people said, it's not my family, but it's my kids' friends. And they took their dad. And so that's where people are like, whoa, I didn't sign up for that. Or I didn't think that this was what was going to happen when he took control.
Yeah. All right. I want to get into the focus group, especially what I alluded to at the top, which is the Hispanic Trump voters who disapprove of his job performance. We'll get into immigration in a minute, but I first just want to listen to their general assessment of the Trump presidency. Let's listen.
I wanted to kind of feel pride in being American again, because, you know, when you think of America, you think of something big and bad and strong and, you know, like respected. I don't know. It seemed like it was kind of going the opposite. And under Trump, you know, you do feel power. You do feel presence. To me, he's a big baby with a bigger button. So it's either him or Kamala. And I chose him by such a slight margin.
I was very concerned with the extreme leftist woke, what they say, woke culture. I have a 12-year-old who's a competitive swimmer, travels everywhere. And there was all these things going on with the new culture and men swimming in girls' sports and men's in. There was such an extreme on the leftist with this that I began to get concerned, because I'm like, I'm all for equal rights, but no way in hell am I going to have my daughter competing against a boy, a biological male, for swim. You know, I would be mortified if she told me that a male is using a restroom with her. So that it seems that there was no longer common sense. And I just really felt that Trump was going to put a stop to this. I thought that the economy would just get better. And I personally know so many people that have lost jobs that it's insane. I live on the East Coast. There's a lot of federal workers. And the other day I called the dentist and he said, oh, yeah, you know, we've had a lot of these workers who no longer have the federal insurance. And I'm like, wow. So it's a lot more rampant than the news. I think the news doesn't really say what's really going on. They've gotten rid of all these big people who are experts in fields, and Trump has just eliminated them. And I'm like, this is really scary. What's the reality TV show on today? You know, today is vaccines. You can't, according to the media, you can no longer go into CVS and get vaccinated if you choose to. So we had the left, which was extreme, and now we have the right, who's on another complete extreme. And it's just like, there's no balance.
I thought, well, let's just give him another try. Even though there was a lot of hateful things that were happening the first time around, I just kind of try to look past that. And I think it just kind of went to his head. So now he's like, oh, I got away with it. They did reelect me. So now I can do whatever I want. And his little guard that he might have had is down, and he's just power hungry. I don't know. I don't really agree with anything he's done. So I really question why I even made the choice to vote for him.
This is the president of peace, right? That was a bunch of BS right now. It's worse than it was 5 years ago. Okay. I don't know anything that's going to stop this war in Gaza at this moment, especially after the Doha attack yesterday. You know, you would think that one of the big reasons also was I voted was like, okay, this guy's going to actually do something about Israel and Gaza, right? So Palestinians deserve a break. I'm sick of it. I've been in this country for what, 45 years now? And I love America, but I'm just getting depressed here. You know what I mean? You kind of just get all the negative. My wife is Colombian. Every time we go to Colombia, people are like, oh, I hate America. Like, nobody wants to come here. You know what I mean? It's kind of sad, right? We're not the country like we used to be. People love this country. They wanted to come here, and it's just going the wrong direction. And I don't know what's going to change it. I don't know. Is he really going to make a difference in the next 3 years, 3 months? God knows. But right now, it's just he hasn't lived up to any of my expectations.
But I look at it now, and I see such a level of extremism. I always knew he was always like a madman. A man who would always, you know, go on the offense, less than defense. But now I see that he's starting to see his citizens and the citizens of other countries as less human, more as statistics. Not only has he not lived up to his promises, where we've barely seen any change compared to, you know, that 50% drug that we were thinking he was going to bring, those 2016, 2020 statistics that he had brought and the economy that he had before. To now, we see that he is super extremist and ignoring history. He's taking down government history websites. He's changing to the Department of War. It seems that power has taken control of his mind.
So, Adrian, I got to say, we do a lot of focus groups. I can't remember one where we've had a number of Trump voters express this much buyer's remorse. It was genuinely somewhat surprising to me. So about 43% of Hispanic voters voted for Trump in 2024, which was up from about 35% in 2020. But Trump's approval rating with Hispanics, I was talking about this at the top, is down as low as 32% in some polls. So how are Democrats seeing the way forward with the Hispanic vote? And is there disagreement with the way forward? But like, clearly there's an opportunity with this group of people where they voted for Trump, but they don't necessarily feel locked in forever to Republicans.
Yeah, there's so much good stuff there. There's so many great quotes there too. First of all, I kind of do love when people are like, and the media just not doing this job. And I'm like, well, then that's how you got the story of the vaccines. You literally just said that later. The media told me that. But anyway, I love the media is always going to get hit. I found actually interesting from New Jersey was talking about right before we lead into her getting into trans issues, she was talking about open borders. And she was just like, from open borders to trans issues, like I was not down with the woke left and all the stuff she was talking about. And that also made me think about how MAGA and Trump really like grabbed hold of that narrative from stuff that I think was, you couldn't argue that the border that had to get under control. And a lot of people, also Democrats, knew that that was an issue, to the way that they were able to make trans like one of the top issues in the election, you know, which a lot of people now would probably say that's not one of the top things they're thinking about. So that stuff is interesting. When I think about Democrats, and when I was actually thinking earlier for my newsletter, I want to find this quote that I got from a Democratic aide. We were talking about, there's always this like buyer's remorse that we start getting into these conversations. So I remember when we did a focus group earlier this year, half of the Hispanics in Arizona were regretting their vote, but it was still early. So they were kind of like, I'm upset, but only half of them were willing to say, I regret the vote. In this one, they all said they regret the vote. The part for Democrats that's challenging is none of them said they would have voted for Harris. They said they either wouldn't have voted or they would have voted a third party or something. So there's this tremendous, obvious opportunity where now all these voters have completely soured on Trump. And there's these opportunities for 2026, 2028. And what are Democrats going to do? And when I spoke to this Democratic aide, he was just like, because there's so much anger at like Schumer and Jeffries. And they were just like, Democrats focus group stuff to hell, like poll stuff, but also sort of don't stand for anything. They're so scared to say something. They're still worried about the November results. And I think that's what people are looking for, like leadership. To answer your question, I constantly am sort of checking on that. And I don't know that much has changed. I do know that people say, how are we going to deal with another 3+ years of this? You know, and so there is that immense fear there. And I think Democrats are still finding their way. We see people like Gallego, and we see people who are saying, we can be sensible on immigration. Like, people understand that we need certain things like labor and we need some level of immigration, and we can still, without using the words America first, we can still take care of our workers and we can still take care of the people here and not make it feel like people are cutting a line. There's people who are trying, you know, and it's not like it has 100% approval rating either, but that's the big question, because there appears to be all these people who are just like over Trump, but they're not flocking to the Democratic Party.
Yeah. And I would say you rarely get a full group of people saying that they regret their vote. I will say whenever you do encounter people who either they regret or they're just like not happy with how things are going, and you're like, well, would you have rather voted for Kamala? And people say no. They don't say they want to vote for Democrats. They wouldn't have voted for Biden either, BTW. It is a show me somebody else. You did just say something that I want to push back on a little bit, which is you were saying she got into the trans stuff and that people aren't talking about that as much anymore. What I would say is that they do care about the trans stuff. And obviously, because of the Charlie Kirk stuff, it is back in the news. Like, they very much wanted a transgender angle because it is something, I actually hear it in lots of focus groups. It animates things in a way where somebody's talking about the extremism of the right, someone will immediately pivot to, well, Democrats don't even know the difference between a man and a woman. And so, like, they use that sort of thing where they'll say, like, they don't even understand this most fundamental thing. And I can see that with Hispanics. These social issues have always mattered to Hispanics, but they don't matter the way, like, when you hear people right now where they jump in the beginning, they'll say, the thing I'm most upset about is prices. Right? Like, you do hear people talking about the excessive nature of the way people are being deported. But a lot of times people will be like, but I'm glad he got rid of transgender stuff for kids. You know, like, they'll like point to that as one of the good things. Talk to me about the way that that issue in particular you think maybe impacted Hispanic voters.
One of my longest time sources that I always check in on, he does a lot of work with Hispanic voters. And he made the argument that that big ad that everybody talked about, the New York Times wrote about, that it was like Trump's big like trans ad, you know, that
Kamala's for they, them, Trump is for you.
Exactly. And he was just like, this is an economic argument. And this is an argument that is saying they don't get it. Like, they don't get you. They're focused on this extreme thing, and I'm focused on bread and butter economy, et cetera. And it's like a pretty simple argument. And so we're having these conversations again recently, and he's talking about how Democrats, like in the Obama era, understood cultural stuff, and that now they're adrift and they don't understand cultural stuff. But I think it gets into that comparison of like, no, you're absolutely right. People bring up the woke stuff and they bring up the trans stuff. But then that's butting up against now the economy stuff and the things where they're like, actually, this is more important. And now that you can make that conversation, yeah, Democrats have messed up, but what are Trump folks doing with the extremism that's going on there? What I've realized in this year is when we see these focus groups and people are like, where do you get your news? X. So the way that the media narrative is just so different from 10 years ago and where people are getting their news, it helps you understand the way that people rank certain issues. But again, as we always know, when there's this buyer's remorse about prices, some of that other stuff can go away a little bit.
This show is sponsored by Quince. Fall is in full swing, and it's the perfect time to refresh your wardrobe with pieces that feel as good as they look. Luckily, Quince makes it easy to look polished, stay warm, and save big without compromising on quality. Quince has all the elevated essentials for fall. Think 100% Mongolian cashmere from $50, washable silk tops and skirts, and perfectly tailored denim, all at prices that feel too good to be true. I'm eyeing their wool coats here as we go into winter. They look designer level, but cost just a fraction of the price. And the quality is just as good, if not better, than things that are much more expensive. By partnering directly with ethical, top-tier factories and cutting out the middlemen, Quince is able to deliver luxury quality pieces at half the price of similar brands. My wardrobe has been in need of an autumn refresh. Can't have sweater weather without some new sweaters, and I can't wear flannels all the time. So Quince has been my go-to for upgrading my getup. It's the kind of wardrobe upgrade that feels smart, stylish, and effortless. And since I've been doing these ads, I've had a lot of members of my family who have tried Quince. They send me pictures of them and their new Quince stuff, and they look great. Talking to you, you know who you are. Keep it classic and keep it cozy this fall with long-lasting staples from Quince. Go to quince.com/thefocusgroup for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/thefocusgroup to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/thefocusgroup. Thanks, Quince. All right, now let's listen to what these Hispanic Trump voters had to say about immigration specifically. Let's listen.
I do like that our borders are secure now. Do I agree with how it's been done and, you know, the process? You know, absolutely not. But yeah, I feel more safe now that the borders are closed and not completely wide open as if when it was Biden's administration.
Basically, ICE going into schools, and I honestly, I just think it's just sad how the kids go home and their parents aren't there. You know, they expect them to be there and they're just not there. And then I also wanted to go back to that question that you asked before. What was it that I was looking for in 2025, January, regarding the immigration? I just didn't think that he was going to go ahead and change basically like, you know, the kids that were born here and then the birth rate. I feel like if they were already born here, why change it?
I personally had a friend who his dad got taken away. Didn't hear from him for 2 months. Even when he asked like local governments, like, hey, have you heard about my dad? What information do you have about like reports? There was no information about him being in the detention center. And he told me personally that he hadn't heard from him for 2 months until he called him from Mexico, where he got sent. Personally, where I live, it's been a lot of action that has made a lot of people uncomfortable. And recently, you know, DeSantis, the governor of Florida, really sided with Trump. Was in Alligator Alcatraz, was an attempt to be made to put a detention center in the Everglades. All of that feels really close to home because it is close to home. It is near to my house, near to where I go to school, near to where I work. I've even seen them come to Wawa where I work. They've gone in there and, you know, they bought stuff.
Being on the West Coast and California and whatnot, there is problems, right? We see it in front of us. So that has gotten better in that sense. But then you see the other flip side where you see families being ripped apart, right? I didn't think it was going to be that dramatic where it's going to be hurtful in that sense. So that kind of changed your mood from like, okay, the country is getting better on that immigration part. You know, the borders are getting more strict, but, you know, at what cost, right?
So the reason I voted for Trump, like I said, I live in New York. The immigration crisis here was getting out of hand. We were all being targeted as well. You know, like the actual hardworking migrants that came here, they're being grouped together, like the violent ones. I am ethnically Venezuelan. I was born here, but I'm ethnically Venezuelan. We have a really, really bad name now. It's terrible. People hate us now. It's extremely unfair. They think we're all gang members, stuff like that. So I think it's important to have that divide. And, you know, there's this gang from Venezuela that came here. I wanted them gone. They were terrorizing Times Square. I'm for immigration. You know, people want to come for better lives, and that's fine. But, you know, at the same time, you know, there has to be much better border control. And we got that, but, you know, at what cost? You know, many innocent people have been taken away.
I just feel like, you know, as soon as he started, it was almost like, I'm in charge again. I'm dictator. I'm going to do stuff like I've never done it before without taking any thought and consideration about the American people. And that's just one topic.
We live in a highly Hispanic area. My kids would get letters home saying we won't let ICE come in. And, you know, they can't come into the kids' school to get the kids. Or sometimes, like a week or so ago, somebody in our area, in our neighborhood, got picked up from ICE. And I mean, it's just like you see it more and more. And there's like, in our neighborhood, they have like announcements like ICE is here today. And it's just a big thing. My family's not worried about it, but my kids go to school here and they have friends that they're worried about it. And for kids, that's not okay to be worried that they're going to come home and not have their parents home.
I think I want the border secure, but at what cost refrain is instructive. How do you think the immigration debate in future Democratic primaries will be different from how it was in 2019? You know, what are the different schools of thought on how to handle immigration policy in the future from Democrats?
Oh, it's going to be completely different. I mean, we could talk about Julian Castro in 2020 primary wanted to like decriminalize crossing the border. We've reached such a place where now that he shut everything down and now that he got rid of legal programs for refugees, all this stuff, everything, it's just completely been crippled. Democrats start from there and they can now choose. Honestly, I don't think they're sitting there saying like they're happy this happened. I think it could benefit them politically because Trump has just like crushed so much stuff in terms of immigration. They can now decide what to stand up and say, you know what? If somebody, you know, was helping us in Afghanistan, we can bring them here and like, this is messed up. But then they can also say like, you know what, we're not exactly going to open up all the asylum stuff the way it was. Like by no means are Democrats going to go back to the immigration stuff they used to support. And in that way, Trump has perhaps enabled them to be able to pick and choose a little bit. And look, we're seeing what happened when they talk about ICE going into schools, when they talk about alligator Alcatraz. He said it's literally hitting close to home. I talked to an immigration activist in Florida. There's Cubans, there's other South Florida Latinos, Venezuelans, Colombians who thought that like they were on Team Trump, but now they realize Team Trump's not on their side. And so like that stuff hitting close to home. I go to Chicago, I go to Belmont Craig, and I go to an 80% Latino area. There's a community enrichment program for parents where they signed up. But guess what? When they're threatening that ICE is coming, none of the parents are showing up to these programs. Mental health programs and programs to help them with their children. So this is what happens when communities are under siege in this way. And that's definitely now this opportunity that has been flipped for Democrats on immigration, I think.
Yeah, I have two thoughts in response to that. The first one is, I do think that if I were Democrats, I would start everything from let's just whiteboard this thing. Let's start over. Let's clear off the desk. Like if Trump's going to burn it all down, that means we get a chance to sort of build from scratch in a place that is more meets this moment and where Americans are. And so I do think that where we feel like we've gone too far in some places where they'll think Trump has been too extreme, and I feel like Democrats really have an opportunity to stake out sort of a broad, compassionate middle, which is where I think a lot of Americans are. The second thing is this close to home element. I just know this listening to voters that when there are personal consequences, people feel differently. But But I guess I want to ask you as like a stand-in for the audience for a question that I get all the time, which is, how could they not know that Trump was going to behave like this and that Trump was going to come for them? Like, what about poisoning the blood of our country? Is it just that these voters don't hear that stuff as much? Like, why did Hispanic voters not think this was where it was going?
Such a good question. Honestly, I a lot of times think about, and this is really simplistic, but like, we have two parties. So if you have decided that Kamala or Democrats or Biden are too extreme, I mean, I think one of the women in the focus group literally said, yeah, I didn't really like anything that he did in his first term, but I figured give him another chance. Why? What are you talking about? You know? And so people are making these choices and now they're confronted with this reality. They're being smacked in the face. You know, I know that there's a strain of a lot of Americans who like don't really want to hear, oh, other countries don't like us. But there's also people that are like, we've been respected. We've been this beacon. And this guy's saying, like, he goes to Colombia and his wife's Colombian, and Colombians are like, people don't like America. What is our posture? What have we done? Well, of course that would be the case. Like, in the way that one guy said that we're treating people sort of like subhuman from other countries. Other countries are watching what we're doing. So that does fold in. And look, I think it's always still the economy number one, but how we got here, how Hispanics believe that, I think they just thought better of these two evils, which I think someone said in the focus group actually, and they just wanted the economy to improve. And they really thought he was going to do that. And now they found again that, you know, it's Lucy with the football kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's very frustrating for listeners, I think, to sort of get their hands around this, but I got to tell you, I always say this, if we had a drinking game, where we had to drink every time somebody in a focus group said the lesser of two evils, we'd be dead, because people are making these choices based on a bunch of inputs where they sort of think both sides are bad, but maybe Trump, because he's a business guy, will at least do something about the economy. It's not simplistic. That is how a lot of people think. But I do want to ask you one sensitive question. Mm-hmm. There is this sort of way about talking about Kamala that's like, well, obviously I wasn't going to vote for Kamala. And I was wondering, you know, obviously after the election, there was just a real sense from people about like, this is because she's Black. It's because she's a woman. There's misogyny. There's racism. Was there something specifically, do you think, about Kamala being a Black woman that led so many people to vote in that like narrow margin where they're like, oh, I have to choose between these two things I don't like? Do you think racism and sexism played a role in that?
I've been covering this for over a decade, and I know that there was a pollster that got in trouble because years ago they said like, oh, Latinos might not vote for a Black guy in Obama. And then a bunch of people pushed back and were like, what are you talking about? And then he got some of the highest support. I'm sure you have things that you say publicly and privately, and maybe some you don't want to say like on a focus group thing. One that I think is just true is like, we're a pretty racist nation and pretty sexist, but we're more sexist. A woman comes around, and I think a lot of voters are just sort of like, I don't know, like, oh, I like this guy. He's strong. I did one of the first stories ever on Hispanic Trump supporters in like 2016. And they were literally like, he's a strong man. And, you know, which also has the whole dictator strongman connotation. And yeah, obviously, a lot of people were not feeling Hillary. So there's always these excuses for women candidates. And so I think that that does make you wonder. And I just remember hearing when she was getting chosen, folks being like, oh, well, of course, Biden's got to go. This guy's got a fork sticking out of his back. But then they were like, oh, what? She doesn't stand for anything. I think there's people who agree that, like, good faith think that that's the case. But then also people who are just like, see her and just see her as like empty suit or whatever the case may be. So I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen that in ways that are like sort of measurable polling. But I did see Hispanic men, and I did see conversations around Clinton years ago that were like, are we going to start a war every 30 days because of, you know, like a period, like stuff that's just insane.
Oh, yeah. You know, we get some of that in the groups, like, but what happens when she's on the rag, guys? It's tough, tough out there.
Yeah.
I want to say a quick word about the Bulwark's upcoming live shows. You all know one of my favorite parts of this thing we've built here is that it is a real community. And when you come to these shows, you get to see what that community looks like. And you guys look great. We've got a live show in Toronto later this month, but unfortunately that's already sold out. We've added another kind of meet and greet session. We did not realize how big the Canadian audience was going to be, but we also have an upcoming show in America. Join Tim, JVL, and me on October 8th in DC to show that you're not afraid to show your face in our nation's occupied capital. As JVL has been saying, one of the best ways we can combat the darkness is to experience it together. And so I hope you will come join us. And if you really want to get all the time with us that you can, VIP tickets are included in the sale that will give you an earlier entry to the show to sit in the audience for an intimate Q&A with JBL, Tim, and myself, where you can flip the script and ask us your questions. Check out the bulwark.com/events for more information, and we will see you there. I hope. Come hang out. Okay. Speaking of tough out there, I want to get to the Hispanic Trump voters' takes on both the National Guard presence in Washington, D.C., where I live. Where are you?
I'm in Brooklyn in New York, so I don't know if the National Guard is coming. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I guess we will see. But we do think it's going to spread. It's not coming for you as soon as it's coming, likely for Chicago, Memphis, some of the places that Donald Trump has been talking about. So we heard some mixed views from the group on this. Let's listen.
Only if it's approved by the state/city. You know, this whole thing with LA, that kind of triggered it, right? It started from that. What was that? A month ago, I think, or 2 months ago. But, you know, neither the governor nor the Newsom nor Bass knew anything about it. So that kind of just shocked everyone. So, you know, the crime has gotten out of hand in some of these cities. Homelessness, you know, the looting, all that breaking and entering kind of stuff to all these stores. You got to, you know, just kind of deal with that somehow, right?
I just feel like it's government overreach. You know, it's taking, like Beth said, it's really taking power away from the state, the city, and going immediately to the federal government, taking action on a very small area. And I also feel that it's a very temporary solution. Rather than, you know, funding the police there or making better systems that they can work on in the long term, you're just going to send the National Guard. At some point, they're going to leave, and it's going to go back to the way it was if nothing's actually getting fixed. Everything feels temporary instead of actually, you know, putting a solution in place.
I think, honestly, the only good thing that came out of it was, and I think it was kind of overkill, like, they were kind of cleaning up the garbage. They're, like, literally garbage on the floor, not, like, people. The National Guard's picking up garbage. I guess that's a very effective way, I guess you could say, of getting rid of trash. It's the only silver lining I see in this. It's just, I don't know, Donald Trump sort of enforcing a police state in D.C., which I think is very excessive. You know, I think he's labeling it as, like, for safety, but I just don't see it as safety. Like, it's sort of like a power trip. It seems like it's overkill, and it's very hypocritical because he likes to critique a lot of countries and their leaders, but what you're doing right now, it's oddly similar to other dictators. You know, it's a little too similar, and yet you're kind of critiquing them all the time. I don't know. It's excessive. It's not really necessary.
I do agree it can be an overstep, but like in my state in Colorado, and a few hours away from me is Aurora, and they have this big block of apartment buildings that have been completely overrun with the Venezuelan gangs. And this is real time. This just happened last week or even a couple of days ago. I don't remember the exact day, but they had all the kids leaving the apartments because the gang members were walking up and down the hallways with guns, and they were harassing everyone who lives there. And the cops are trying, but there's just not enough that they can do. So they do need that help. And Trump did say something about an emergency alert or something, but they didn't send in the guard yet or anything like that. But in that instant, I think that they should, and that they shouldn't be waiting even longer.
Okay. A lot of mixed opinions in there. So you've been in Chicago the last few days as the Trump administration has flirted with the sort of DC style deployment of the National Guard, and as ICE has stepped up enforcement and detention operations in the city. One through line in your reporting is the culture of fear that ICE has created in a lot of the country. How are folks in Chicago dealing with that and sort of like preparing for what might be coming?
Yeah, when I knew I was going to go, even before I went, I started reporting and talking to folks. And we actually had an exclusive story on the activists, the organizers in D.C. and in L.A. and in New York. They did this big sort of unreported call where they talked to Chicago leaders and, you know, from the teachers union president to just like those organizers that are really tapped in. And they were explaining to them how to prepare for this. LA, you know, in some ways got caught flat-footed, and then you had the stuff going on with the LAPD and different things. But now it's very clear that Trump's playbook here, and we know this guy has one playbook for many different things. And here it's like, provoke a blue city, right? And you do this ICE stuff, and you have a city like LA or Chicago standing up for their neighbors and being like, these are workers, what are you doing? Provoke some sort of violent altercation, then you can say, well, I got to send in the National Guard. I'm the president. I believe in law and order. And so I think what was really well done here was just like they consistently talk behind the scenes about not letting stuff turn violent and making sure that if there are protests, being super careful. This stuff matters, right? Because we know that these are powder keg situations and then suddenly something can get out of control. So first they were just like really prepared. And people told me that LA probably has the most immigrant, like infrastructure, immigrant rights stuff for years, but they were like, Chicago's probably second or third. One of the groups in there, Illinois Immigrant and Refugee Rights Coalition, they were started after Reagan's, you know, 1986 law. So they've been around Chicago for a long time. They started a hotline for immigrants to call in with any type of issue. Now it's ICE sightings, but normally it could be any type of issue. So these groups have been around in the community. And then sort of like where the culture of fear came from is just people know that there are sightings and people have been getting picked up. A beloved flower guy was picked up on Sunday, deported by Tuesday. And there's another guy that I heard about who has a son with a developmental disability, and he was deported, and he's the breadwinner. And he's been here for an extremely long time of years. I believe it was 22 years. So that kind of stuff where, you know, people told me if he can't do these massive raids, which were done maybe at the end of the Bush years, beginning of the Obama years, he can, you know, just sort of ramp up this fear. And that's been a big part of it.
Hey, just as a quick aside, well, it's germane, but it is not quite in the realm of the focus groups. It's more a point of personal interest. I sometimes think about these people who have been here for 22 years and they get deported. Where do they go? Like their whole life is here. What happens? They get off the plane and then what? They don't have a house. Like, I know this is a big question, but I guess it's so easy to be like, well, they're deported.
Yeah.
It's one thing when you're like, a bunch of people came here illegally. We pick them up at the border and we send them back, right? Because they were in the middle of an active life wherever they were. Maybe it was bad. Maybe they're fleeing something terrible. For people who've been here for 22 years, like, what do they do?
Yeah. If I was sent to Mexico tomorrow, I'd be pretty like horrified about how to fix my life. I mean, you know, it's an interesting question because we wrote about a TikTok chef that he's decided to self-deport. So he knew he was going to Oaxaca. He was able to fly out. He was able to plan stuff. What happens if you're just picked up one day doing your job and now suddenly you're in this unfamiliar country? I think there are probably groups that can help, but how do you even get connected? I've written about guys that got sent to Venezuela or Colombia and they, you know, they don't have work authorization papers. They don't have the proper licenses to get a motorcycle, to go find a job, you know, just the stuff that's like, we don't even think about it. So yeah, I think it just completely upends and destroys their life, notwithstanding the fact that their family is now living in the US and they don't have access to them.
I mean, just like 22 years, like you don't know, you're here now. Like you've been here a long time. Everything's here. So we did other focus groups over the summer with 2024 Trump voters who disapprove of him, but who weren't all Hispanic. And that led to a very telling mix of views on the immigration issue. For most, but not all of the people you're about to hear, the stakes felt less personal than from some of the Hispanics that we've heard from. Let's listen.
Please target people entering the country now and criminals who are here now illegally. I feel like that should be our first point of action, not going into elementary schools and picking kids out of seats.
I voted for Trump for a singular reason, which was immigration. I'm pleased with how things are going regarding that, but I am pleased with the fact that if he says he's going to do something, it's done. Whether you like it or not, he stands on business. And that's something that we need. Not sad about the raids. It has happened here. In Brooklyn, the Haitians fought back and no one was detained. So there's lessons to be learned. How you choose to apply them is up to the individual. But I'm very pleased with how Trump is governing thus far.
I was kind of hoping for like what everyone had said, like illegal immigrant criminals would be targeted. But now there's a bunch of human rights concerns surrounding it as well. And again, a lot of that's probably media coverage too. I'm not there. I don't know how it's actually being handled, which I feel like is another massive problem right now. You have to dig for hours to actually find sources that are credible on what's actually happening. If you don't live in places like California where you can see it, I live in Kansas, so nothing politically charged happens in Topeka. I have to get all my stuff from the news.
I definitely disagree with like inhumane treatment of people. I take a lot of issue with what I hear about the conditions in a lot of the like essentially like camps, that internment camps that people are being held in. That bothers me a lot. And I am a fan of, I'm a lawyer, so I mean, I like legal process for people. But just what's been going on for like the past at least 4 years during Biden's administration with granting automatic asylum to people and letting them stay here and wait it out was catastrophically bad. And not just from an economic standpoint, but also from a cultural standpoint. I mean, I think that a certain amount of immigration is good for society. When there's so much immigration that it starts to change like the cultural fabric and the social fabric, that has real ramifications for like what I consider the American identity.
The people in California that are here illegally, let's say they walked across the border, came in a television, whatever it was, they got here, that have been here for decades, they do not believe that they're here illegally. They have a driver's license. They have a social security card. They've worked here. They pay taxes. They believe they are here legally. So to come in and try to swoop them up, they've been working. They've been paying taxes. For instance, we had a nanny for 16 years. Taxes paid, had her driver's license, drove around. They will come in and pick her up. But she doesn't believe she's here illegally, and tons of her family. And then the other thing is your constitutional rights, having to provide your identification when asked or when demanded, when you're not even a suspect in a crime. You've shown no criminal activity. You're washing a car, and they roll up, put you against the car, and demand you identify yourself. If these roles were reversed and it was happening to all the white people, there'd be hell to pay. Like, just no reason. You're just walking down the street, and hey, you're white. Let me see your ID. Well, what have I done? I haven't done anything. Give me your ID. It's not legal. So, and people say, well, if you haven't done anything wrong, you got nothing to worry about. Sure, sure. You know, I pay my taxes, but do I want the IRS breathing over my neck? Like, no, I don't. So, you know, that's my opinion. In terms of what's going on with ICE, it's reprehensible. I'm here in Southern California. I see it. You know, my wife's Mexican. My kids are Mexican or half. And I have family members, hundreds of them that are Mexican, and they're scared. They're scared to leave their house. And I watched an ICE raid at the Bubble Bath Car Wash, and it was not a raid. It was a complete takeover, going after people that were legal citizens. Just because you work at a car wash and you're a Mexican doesn't mean you're here illegally. And taking people's IDs, lining them up against a wall and taking their IDs and forcing them to show them, is my wife next because she's Hispanic? You know, so right now that's a huge concern for me. Is someone had mentioned human rights, you know, our constitutional rights, I believe, are being violated. When I say our, I don't have any problem because I'm a, you know, older white Republican walking down the street. Like, there's just no issue with that. So, but as far as my family, yeah, it's a very big concern.
Just one note on that last guy. He is still pretty conservative. And we asked that group how they'd vote if we reran the 2024 election. And that guy said he would still vote for Trump. So,
my wife might be next, but listen, I'd still vote for Trump.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a whole genre of news stories at this point, and JVL really loves to bring them up on the next level. He talks about them all the time, of people who voted for Trump and then have had friends and loved ones deported, like in Hazleton, PA, with that. It was like somebody that was just like very beloved in the community, and they were all like, but not her. And so is the center of this debate going to shift eventually from the state of the border, which is kind of where it's been, right? Like, we talked about the pendulum, and I think you're right. Like, as conversations shift, the pain points shift. And so the pain point in the 2024 election was that the border was too open. But like, does it shift again to sort of the inhumanity of what's happening? Or is it that the Overton window has moved such that you cannot start a conversation about immigration without first saying, like, we have to solve the crisis at the border. Border's got to be closed.
I would love to zoom in on one of the women said. She said, immigration changing the cultural and social fabric of the nation, right? Because I think that there's places, I did a story once about like Wichita, Kansas, like basically their Hispanic community had doubled. And so when that happens quickly, people were like, what the hell's going on here? This is my neighborhood. It used to be different. One of the reasons SB 1070 didn't work in Arizona was because the Supreme Court had issues with it and there was rampant racial profiling. Which now
you're going to have to explain what that is. SB.
Yeah. SB 1070 was the, very people often say draconian immigration law. Show me your papers law.
Show me your papers.
Stop someone. Say, hey, you're brown. Like, let me see what's up with your immigration status. And a huge part of that was we don't racial profile in the U.S. because now you're grabbing U.S. citizens, et cetera. But the Supreme Court just said that racial profiling is cool. I mean, this just happened last week, in relation to this L.A. case. So now you can do racial profiling, and that also is the social and cultural fabric of the nation. Like, are people going to be uncomfortable with that? Are people going to say like, hey, that's not okay. This guy just put it so perfectly when he's talking about like, if they were all white people getting grabbed in the street, show me your ID. You'd be like, whoa, wait a second. What is going on? So, I mean, I think that's the like ultimate question, which is this uncomfortable enough? And I think what we've all honestly seen in focus groups too is like, the economy is number one and immigration is this great hammer, like a second thing. And maybe the ads will not be about immigration. They will be about this guy screwed the economy. But then it's that next thing, because a lot of the Hispanic voters also say the economy is a mess. Tariffs are not helping. And on top of that, I work in construction and he's taking people. And this is not cool. It's the second like strong buttressing issue that adds to like, what the hell is this guy doing? Maybe not the number one issue, but we've seen that happen, by the way, in 2020, when Biden won Arizona, that was because immigration was no longer a top like three or four issue. It always is in Arizona. I remember talking to Chuck Coughlin, one of the pollsters out in Arizona, former Republican, being like, when immigration is not a top issue, Biden has a chance. And then Biden won Arizona. So that's how our politics can shift from election to election.
Yeah. It was about COVID. And because we'd shut the border down because of COVID, yeah, it was much less of an issue. So let me ask you the hardest question, which is, if somebody asked me, how would I solve the immigration issue in this country? I would try to, because this is just me, much to everybody's annoyances, I would try to strike this balance. It's funny when people say American culture, like it changes with immigration. I'm like, immigration is American culture. Like, I am very pro-immigration because even when you get stupid things like Cash Patel saying, I'll see you in Valhalla or whatever to Charlie Kirk, when I'm like the Indian FBI director talking about the white Christian, like, I don't know, I'm like, this is America. Like, we are a weird hodgepodge of every place else, of everyone who came here or was brought here, and like, we put ourselves together in this great stew and we try to sort it out. And so I think that we should still retain a lot of pride in the fact that people want to come here, that we were a big and rich and awesome tapestry. And that's why people want to come here, while also saying you have to have borders. They have to be secure, because borders are, they are a national security issue. They are about fentanyl and drugs. People are always like, why do people in Ohio care? They don't have lots of immigrants in Ohio. And I'm like, people think that because drugs are getting across the border and they have a ton of fentanyl in Ohio. First of all, they have more Hispanics than you think they do. But more importantly, they see it as a drug issue. And Republicans are very good at, I think, fusing together crime, terrorism, immigration, and turning them all kind of into one big issue that gets people like, I'm afraid of this thing. And so I do think you have to say, look, we're going to secure the border. We're going to figure out how to get people here legally faster, and we're going to have more immigration courts so that we know who's in the country. Because that's a thing that you hear a lot. People want to know the American government knows who's here so that they feel safer. And I think this is sort of like abortion. It's like this incredibly potent issue that actually very much does have a wide, broad middle that you could appeal to if you could ever get out of the primaries, like the super hard, hardcore things. But like, you've done a lot more reporting on this than I have. Mm-hmm. How would you solve immigration as an issue, or how would you construct it for the highest, best use of America?
I wanted to start talking about common sense immigration and start going into all these industries. Honestly, one of the things that I think Stephen Miller is doing and this administration is doing is like kneecapping and destroying stuff so effectively that if a new administration comes in, they're firing all these immigration judges. So it's like, all right, well, I guess when I get in, I got to get a bunch of new immigration judges just to even make these trains run slightly late instead of not run at all. So, okay, if we put that to the side, which I do think is an issue, the way that they have like systematically destroyed a lot of legal immigration stuff, a lot of programs, refugee programs, we tell people they can come here legally, and now we're taking away that status and making them here illegally. So those are like really robust issues. So I don't want to just say like they don't matter. But I mean, I don't know if a Democrat can effectively message, because you made a great point, which is that Republicans are good at saying like they're taking your job, or, you know, it's either them or you, and that kind of stuff. Can Democrats effectively message common sense stuff? Like, there's a story just out about red state farmers being like, what the hell are you doing? We need workers. We need people. So upset with the administration. So from farming, meatpacking, and just a lot of these industries where we have immigrants that do this labor that a lot of Americans don't want to do, this is not a new thing. You can look up stories of the very stringent Alabama law that followed the Arizona law. And I wrote about that earlier this year for the Bulwark. And they tried to get Americans of different races, white and black people, hey, we're going to pay you to come do this. And fruits and vegetables are dying on the vine because no one wants to do these jobs because they're terrible. So if there can be some common sense on some of the industries and some of the business side of this, then you can also start getting to those conversations about like, I don't know, it seems easy to us to say streamline and make it easier for people to come here. Guess all that stuff is very hard. I know people get upset when they feel that the line is being cut. But now that immigration has been strongly cut at the border, maybe you can start these conversations on common sense stuff. You have a guy like Ruben Gallego, I bring him up because he has openly tried to put out an immigration plan. A lot of other Democrats are sort of waiting to see where chips fall. And I asked him, it sounds like what you're saying is a worker first plan. And he was like, yes. So I think Democrats can have these conversations because now they're not going to be accused of open border because the border has been so shut down in many ways. They can say common sense stuff like a worker first immigration plan probably sounds good to a lot of people and just sort of start there.
Yeah, there's got to be a way for people to come here legally that is less of a Rube Goldberg insanity, so that this idea that I think most Americans sort of agree with, which is we want people to come, we just want them to come the right way. This is always, to me, one of the big issues is that if you were born here, you've never had any exposure to the American immigration system. And so as a result, you think like, why would you cross the border instead of just coming legally? Like, you can't do that. And I basically agree, except I also just want people to realize that the process to become an American citizen, it gets so difficult now to go through the immigration process legally that people would rather risk their lives crossing the border than try to do it that way. And like, we have to find a rational place where people who want to come here to work and to live and to experience what was the greatness of America, what could be again the greatness of America, there's a way to do it. It's a little late in the pod for me to like push back on something you said, but I guess I agree that the economic argument is an important one, and these, you need these business leaders making this, but I guess I just don't want it to be like, boy, we need to like exploit immigrant labor to do the shittiest jobs that we can't find any fat rich Americans to do. Like, I guess they'll find that just a slightly unsatisfying answer.
Yeah. Yeah. No, look, I literally said this on a conversation. I forgot which journalist I was having this Substack chat with, but there's a lot of this feeling in the immigrant and Latino communities about like, they want our labor, but they don't want us. They want our food, you know, or our music, but they don't want us. And so I think there's like a lot of people that still can agree that we are a nation of immigrants and that it makes us better. And, you know, there's the traditional immigration coalition was always like also faith and law enforcement stuff. A lot of faith leaders that are just really uncomfortable and not okay with what's going on and are fighting back in their own ways. And I think that can bubble, right? So, but yeah, you're right. It's huge, huge conversation.
Adrian Carrasquillo, thank you so much for joining us. And thanks to all of you for listening to another episode of the Focus Group Podcast. We'll be back next week. But in the meantime, remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to The Bulwark on YouTube, and become a Bulwark Plus member at thebulwark.com so you can get more of Adrian's excellent reporting. See you guys soon.